Welcome to the Should've Bet More podcast presented by VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Coming up on the show, Jeff Parles of ESPN Las Vegas will join us. We will go over the Super Bowl. It is this weekend. We will get to that. We'll do some maybe college basketball. I think we'll probably save the baby, maybe do a little baseball, but usually we go around the board here with Jeff and touch on a few different things, but it'll be mostly Super Bowl, little college hoops. Giannis does not get traded, so I'll get to that in a minute. And that was one, should have bet more, should have bet it, period. That was one where I feel like I had a pretty good feel for it. Seems like Milwaukee will deal him in the summer. I'll get to that in a second. But we'll start with the Super Bowl, and it's interesting. I'll just did add a couple bets. Steve Fezzik tweeted this out or texted this out in one of the group chats where I'm. Over 3.5 punch for the Patriots, over 3.5 punch for the Seahawks. I think this is a game, and typically Super Bowls are slow starting, low scoring early. There's some nerves. There's some conservative play. Over 3.5 punch for each side is one I've added. I've been talking about this game on and off for a couple weeks. I think the Seahawks win. I think they win a relatively low-scoring game. Go 27-17. That's been the score that's stuck in my head before, and it's interesting. I mentioned the prop that Matt Youmans mentioned that will any score of the Super Bowl, will the final score of the Super Bowl match any previous score? So will this year's Super Bowl match any previous final score from any Super Bowl? And 27-17 is actually the only repeat final score, so it's interesting that that was the one before I even knew about this prop. That's the one that kind of popped into my head. But I'll go 27-17. I'll go Darnold MVP. I still think him at plus money is the best bet. I think the weakest unit of all of these two teams, and I thought all year the NFC is better. You can certainly poke holes in the Patriots' path. I just think the weakest unit of all of these teams. Seattle's a pretty well-balanced team. Imanwari, the star safety, the rookie, is banged up. That's a concern. He was hobbling into the hotel. I guess he got banged up in practice. Got a couple days to get better. I'm sure they'll shoot him up with whatever they can shoot him up with to get him ready. But I think the weakest unit of all these is the Patriots' offensive line. They have not blocked well for May. May has coughed the ball up under pressure a few times. And he's gotten away with it just because the Chargers, with their issues, couldn't punch back. The Texans, we know that disaster in the snow a couple weeks ago. And then last week, Denver, where, you know, Denver, or 2 weeks ago, Denver really, despite having a backup quarterback, despite the blizzard in the second half, they had their chances. They had their chances early. And the Patriots, you know, all of their points. I mean, they had one drive that led to a field goal, and that was controversial because I thought the quarterback sneak was short. The fumble from Stidham, which set up the only touchdown, was a very controversial play. Could have easily ruled that a forward pass. The Patriots really didn't move the ball. Didn't have to move the ball, but they didn't move the ball. And that's been a theme here throughout these playoffs. So I think the Seahawks defense controls Seattle. Controls New England, and something like, like I said, 27-17, Darnold's the MVP. I added over punts. I think under Walker rushing yards is a good play because I do think New England has been good defensively on the run, and you never know these running backs, the usage, you know, how it's going to go. So him getting over 71.5 yards is, I think is unlikely. I think that's worth an underplay. So those are my thoughts on that. I don't want to just sit here and regurgitate the things I've been doing for a couple weeks because it does feel like a couple things. It feels like those title games. I just mentioned Denver, New England in the snow. Feels like that day of the blizzard here on the East Coast, blizzard around the country. It feels like that Sunday was like a month ago. It feels so long ago. I don't know. Because doing shows all the time and college basketball since and you know, watching the NBA trade deadline and talking about Giannis and thinking about, you know, the market there. Man, it just feels like such a long gap between that day and the Super Bowl. And I get the sense that other people are starting to say this too. I heard Bill Krakenberger on with Gil Alexander on Thursday. And he was saying essentially the same thing. There's just not a lot of juice for this game. And something I mentioned before the AFC title game, that Denver-New England game, is how that AFC title game for 10, 15 plus years has always had Mahomes, Brady, and Manning. And it was different to have May versus Stidham. It was just kind of a changing the guard in a weird year. I don't know if that's why there's a lack of juice, because if you think about it, the last 15, 20 years, the same goes for the Super Bowl, where you've had either Mahomes, Brady, Peyton Manning in one of those games in most of the years here. You did have the Burrow versus Stafford a few years ago, but for the most part, either Mahomes is in this game, Brady's in this game, Peyton Manning's in this game, and the fact maybe that it's Darnold versus May, and I'm not opposed to getting new blood in the game, I just think people maybe look at this game and say, this is not, you want to think of the Super Bowl and like, all right, this is a game where greatness is on display. These are great teams, great quarterbacks. This is going to be a true champion. I know the Seahawks are, I think, seventh best DVOA all time, according to Aaron Schatz, and that just does not feel right. But it doesn't feel like Darnold May, even though Darnold has quieted a lot of the doubters, and he's 60 minutes away from quieting them for all time, because you win a Super Bowl, you pretty much put yourself beyond reproach. You put yourself in a very exclusive club. And it'd be interesting to handle if May won the Super Bowl, what conversation he's in, because he's so young, he hasn't played well. So those are interesting conversations, but it doesn't feel like this is greatness. It doesn't feel like, oh man, you got to watch this game and see like who comes out on top. This is a champion. This is a great team. It just feels like there were a lot of injuries this year. Mahomes, Allen's team came up short. Lamar Jackson was hurt. The Lions got banged up. It just doesn't feel like this is a game where greatness is on display or at stake here. So maybe that's just my read on it. I mean, I'll be into it. I'm obviously going to watch every play. I'm, you know, root for my bets. It's the Super Bowl. Once the game starts, it's as exciting as anything. It's the Super Bowl. It's as exciting as anything. I just feel like the lead up to it, there's not as much juice unless you're a Patriots fan. Maybe the fact that the Patriots are in this game again, post Brady, post Belichick, which is fascinating. It is. And you could, again, just dismiss who they've played, when they've, all of this stuff. The fact Belichick being the coach of this team 24 months ago, and here they are. Imagine that last day. I remember the last day, and that was another snowstorm. The final day of the season, 2023, January of 2024. They lose to the Jets. And they were just a mess. They couldn't score. They couldn't move the ball. Imagine telling someone now, the Patriots, don't worry, you're going to have a down year next year, and then the year after that, you're going to be back in the Super Bowl. I mean, it's just unfathomable. So maybe they don't get enough credit for that, despite the fact that things have broken their way here. But maybe that's why people are not as juiced up, unless you're a Seahawks or a Patriots fan, not as juiced up for the Super Bowl. My goodness, this is a personal thing. But can I get Minnesota in this game? At one point here, can I just see him in the game once? It's amazing. 1998, 15-1, up 7 with a couple minutes left. I think I talked about this a lot on the Megapod. Miss a field goal where Gary Anderson had missed all year. Atlanta ties it. Minnesota almost intercepts a ball. That would have sealed it. And then with almost a minute left, the greatest offense of all time, scoring offense at that point. And I think the Patriots have ended up breaking that record in 07 for most points. Might have been the Rams a couple years ago. The record did get broken, but the Vikings set it. They take a knee with 50 seconds left, goes to overtime, and they almost had Moss on a deep shot. And not to be, Atlanta wins the game. And then in 09, they're driving. They dominate the game. I think they had 200 more yards than the Saints, driving to win the game. They're in field goal range. Longwell was a good kicker. Farves all day to run. They get too many men in the huddle that moves them back, so they decide to pass after they're gashing them the entire drive. They go to pass. Favre has all the room in the world to run. It would be a chip shot field goal. He throws across his body. Interception. They lose a coin toss, a literal flip of the coin. That was the old sudden death rules. The last time it was sudden death rules, that actually got it changed. Garrett Hartley kicks the field goal, and the Vikings get eliminated. Saints go to the Super Bowl where they win. I know it's a side rant. I would love to see Minnesota in this game. Just at some point, having Darnold in the game is certainly salt in the wound, but I'm going to go with Darnold, and that would add to the misery of the Vikings fans. 27-17, Darnold holding up the trophy a year after. You know, and he played terribly, so I can't kill him for it, but he played terribly in the division title game, the final game against the Lions, and then again against the Rams in the playoffs, and here he is a year later probably holding up the trophy here on Sunday. So I digress. I'll go 27-17, Seahawks win, Darnold MVP. We'll see if we get a good game. I do like the under. It feels like I haven't heard anybody say they like the over. I don't think I've heard one person say they like the over, which is concerning. But I could see like 3-0 after the first quarter, scores after the first quarter. So maybe the under is the best bet of all these. But I do think Seattle wins. Wouldn't be shocked if the Patriots won, but I'd be a little bit surprised. So we'll see. We'll see what Jeff Parles thinks in a minute. Just quickly on Giannis, he doesn't go. I would imagine the summer is when they do it. I wish I'd kind of bet on my opinion here, and it's not easy to bet here in Connecticut, which prediction markets have it. I got to get on those prediction markets because DraftKings offers this stuff, but just not in Connecticut. The deals didn't make any sense. The Warriors apparently offered 4 unprotected first rounders. Bucks, I understand why that's appealing, but is that going to help me soon enough, or am I going to be fired by the time those picks come to fruition way down the road? And who knows if those picks are even good? What if they re-sign Giannis and maybe those picks aren't even valuable? Those are scratch-off tickets. That wasn't a great offer. The Knicks, Towns, forget it. Towns, you got to attach picks to Towns to get me to take Towns. Towns is not worth anything. Towns is worth negative value with his contract. Towns is never going to happen. He's not going to the Knicks, I don't think, unless you get creative this summer. I can't see that. Maybe the Lakers enter the fray this summer, but I just think you'll get somebody that's disappointed this summer that will pull the trigger. And you know, Bucks fans are delusional. They want to think, oh, he's going to stay. We're going to get lucky with the lottery. I doubt it. I doubt it. He's 31. They've won one playoff series in the 5 years since they won the title. They have no assets. They have no roster. He's not going to rot on that team for the rest of his career. I know he's got a weird personality in terms of he wants to leave, but he doesn't want to say he wants to leave. And he's afraid to be the one to break up. But I would imagine this summer, whether it's Spurs, Lakers, Rockets, it's a whole other discussion for another day. But Giannis stays is the big story of the deadline. Clippers breaking it down here with Harden going. They get Garland back. They send Zubats to Indiana. Indiana could actually be good next year because they'll get a high pick. They'll get Haliburton back. They got Zubats on a reasonable deal. But nothing that moves the needle, especially nothing that moves the needle in terms of a bet. I think the teams in the mix, and the playoffs will be good. I talked about this the other day. The teams in the mix, OKC, still the favorite. Denver, San Antonio, certainly worthy adversaries, although Denver has not played well here before the break. East wide open, you probably give a lean to the Knicks with Pistons, Celtics right in that conversation. I think any of those three teams, those are the three favorites. The Celtics, I don't think if they don't get, they're going to need Tatum, and maybe the fact they traded Simons is a sign that Tatum is coming back. But East pretty wide open. West, the three or four teams you know that are in the mix, so nothing that triggers a bet in terms of the deadline. It ends up being just a whole lot of nothing unless you bet Milwaukee to be Giannis's next team. Unless you bet Giannis to stay, then you had a nice little score. And I saw that was minus 120. It was Wednesday when I was doing the show on a numbers game when I did my spot there. And Kelly's like, minus 120. I was just shocked by that. You never know with that stuff when you're betting intel and you don't have the intel. I mean, that's an information market. If you don't have the information, you're just guessing, even if it's an educated guess. It's not always a great feeling, but should have gone with my gut there because Giannis stays, and I don't know that any of those offers ended up being serious. And people are kind of making fun of Shams Charania of ESPN because he reported that Bucks are listening to offers. Giannis wants out. Then he doesn't get traded, and people are making fun of Shams. Doesn't mean it wasn't true. Doesn't mean they weren't listening. It's just none of the offers made sense. We talked about all the reasons why it was going to be difficult, where you had to trade enough to Milwaukee to make it worth it, but you still needed enough left over to be a title contender, and that was just a very delicate line to walk with the expression. That was just a lot to juggle. That was a tough thing to balance between, all right, I'm going to give you enough to make Milwaukee happy, but I'm going to have enough left over where I can still win a championship. That's a lot to balance. That's a lot to juggle. Those are a couple boxes that are very hard to check off simultaneously, where you can give up enough to make it worth it for Milwaukee, but still have enough left over. So Giannis stays. We get a bunch of deals. None of them really move the needle. And we will, NBA just kind of comes in and out of a focus here. I think pretty soon here you get a quiet month. We do have a good month or a good weekend of college basketball. UConn St. John's on Friday night. I think UConn probably wins that game. The Garden, they're usually good in. St. John's, don't really have a point guard. It's been kind of a disappointing St. John's season. I think UConn gets it done. But good games this weekend. Houston, BYU, UNC, Duke, Michigan State, Illinois. So pretty good card on college basketball this weekend. And just a few weeks of this, you get to March, and then it's an exciting time of the year. But Super Bowl is Sunday. We'll see what Jeff Parles thinks. We'll get his thoughts on some college hoops. That is all next. This should have been more podcast. Rate, review, subscribe before I forget to remind you. Let's talk to Jeff. Should have been more podcast. We are back a couple days away from the Super Bowl, and our buddy joins us once again, ESPN Las Vegas. It is the great Jeff Parles. Jeff, thanks for coming on. Are you excited for this game? Are you exhausted talking about it? Where do you sit here, Patriots and Seahawks?
Where do I sit at the moment? We're recording this on Thursday morning out here on the West Coast. I can't really say I'm tired of the matchup, but when the matchup was set, it was first was, all right, thank goodness we don't have to talk about Jarrett Stidham for 2 weeks, which was my first reaction. The second reaction is, oh, this is probably going to be an under game. But then the entire world is on the under this week. So this is a very, very difficult betting Super Bowl, Will. Like, usually, like, my list is going into these gate, going into the Super Bowl is like, oh, I could talk myself into about probably 50 of these, like 50, 60 props. This one, my list is barely 15. So it's a very difficult go finding the right bets this go around in comparison to past years.
What would you say are your favorite three or four bets that you have?
Well, the first thing I bet was DeMarcus Lawrence to win the MVP at 125-1 after the matchup was set, which may seem like a totally ridiculous bet, but here's my thinking in this game, Will. One of two things happen. Seattle wins by 30-plus, or they win an absolute ugly grinder, 13-10, 16-10, something in that pocket, which the weakest thing with New England's team this postseason has been their offensive line. And this is now the fourth straight game where they will play a high-end defense. And I wanted to have a number on that Seattle defense in the MVP market, and I thought DeMarcus Lawrence's number was the best, and I could see an argument where he's lined up against Will Campbell. And Campbell's had an awful postseason, maybe gets a sack and a half, two sacks, and it's a grinder game. I think I'm live there. Now, it's hard for a defensive player to win an MVP more times than not, unless if the game gets out of hand. Like Von Miller, that was like the closest defensive MVP game we've had, and that was two touchdowns. Obviously, the Malcolm Smith game with the last time the Seahawks won was 43-8. Dexter Jackson in the early 2000s, that game was a complete destruction. So it's risky, but I would, again, small little bet on that. Again, a lot of these are bombers here. If this game's a grinder, Travion Henderson, I understand he hasn't been utilized much since the concussion, but rushing totals sub 20 for this game. That seems super low for a guy who's capable of busting a 125-yard run in your home. Over 18.5, I think, is pretty good on that. And then we get into the unders of guys who don't play much. Elijah Arroyo, under 4.5 receiving yards at Circa. Fine, if you get one catch for five, so be it. Under on Bobo. Everyone loves Bobo after catching the touchdown in the NFC title game. Dude had four catches all year, Will. So under a half a reception on Bobo, I like. And then I got Borgalis to miss a PAT or a field goal at plus 250 at Circa. Rookie, biggest situation he's ever been in. Maybe we'll get a situation at the end of the half where he's kicking like a 58-yard field goal and he misses it. So I like that number more than Myers to miss a kick. So plus 250 on Borgalis to miss either a PAT or a field goal in this game is what I'm a god. So those are my favorites. I don't really love much in this game. I don't think these numbers are so tight, especially for a guy like me who doesn't bet a ton of props during the year. I'm trying it a little differently last year because a lot of your props are correlated to what you think will happen in the game. I got clocked last year because I like Kansas City. This year I like Seattle, but again, this is kind of one of those hard ones because I think the game path could go super duper under, or we could see like 45-10 and you could get some weird prop things where like New England passing props and receiving props go over despite the fact that they got clobbered because they're chasing the game. So it's just a weird matchup for me, Will. It's just a very hard betting matchup this go around.
Sounds like you'd be surprised though if New England won.
Yes. I think the only path New England has is if we get a Darnold turnover game, which could happen. I mean, look at what's happened with them in the postseason so far. They've allowed less than 9 points per game, 26 points in three games. Now, look, this is by far the best offense they're seeing because the Charger offense with that offensive line had no chance in that game. Stroud was an abomination against them. If Stroud was even okay in that game, we probably are talking about Seattle-Houston right now, Will. We probably are because Houston was in that game, even with Stroud just putting together an ultimate stink bomb, and Ryan, again, did that. That game almost caused me to have a stroke on this show a few weeks ago. But Denver and like, if the snow doesn't come, like, who knows what happens there, Will? Like, who knows? Like, we could be very easily talking about Stidham against that Seattle defense.
Or if Peyton doesn't kick the field goal, or if the Stidham ball is ruled an incompletion, which I mean, I watched it a million times. I don't know what the hell, if it was an incompletion or a fumble. It looked like he was going forward and got tipped
look,
back.
I have no idea on that one. The Peyton field goal thing, I'm not going to go as crazy as everyone else just because I don't think anyone knew the weather was going to deteriorate.
Oh, no,
like
I'm with
that.
You. I'm
but,
with
like,
you.
I think that was just – that's a classic hindsight 2020.
I agree.
And also, too, the take the points crowd is much louder and dumber than the go for it crowd more times than not. So, look, I think it's – that one's tough, too, because it's like – if you get a touchdown there and it's 14-0, the game might be over with your defense.
And they were moving it at the time. Like you said, it's hindsight because you look back and they did nothing ever since. But they were moving the ball pretty well at that point.
Play. Like at the time, I was like, you know what? You go for it. If you get a touchdown in this drive, it's going to be really hard for New England to get 14 points in this game. And that was even before the snow showed up. And, I mean, look, New England got – a short field goal and a touchdown on a short field. Like, it's not like New England did anything in that game. Like, that's the weird thing with the narrative with the Patriots. Like, and look, I think the narrative is coming from the New England fans more than anything else. Like, the Patriots were pretty awful in that game on offense. They were awful in the game on offense against Houston, except for that miraculous catch by Booty. And they didn't score a touchdown against the Chargers until the fourth quarter. Like, Drake May's been terrible in this postseason for the most part. So the Patriots have won in the postseason on the virtue of their opponents not being good. And look, I got to give their defense a ton of credit. Their defense has been spectacular. Like, there's no arguing what their defense has done. But again, unless if Darnold has a turnover happy game, which again could happen against a blitzing heavy defense. But again, is New England really going to score more than 17 in this game, Will? And will that 17 be enough? If that happens to be the number they get to, I just don't think so. I just think Seattle's much better. I think this is just a classic. We've had this a few times the last few years in select sports, like a monster in plain sight that we didn't respect because of who their quarterback was. Like, that's just kind of what the Seattle team has ended up being, where they're the best team in the best point differential in the NFL. They're the best team in the NFL this year. And I know New England had an awesome point differential this year. But this feels like monster in plain sight that we just ignored because of who the quarterback was.
Yeah, it's amazing. Both teams long shots to get to this game before the season. Once in a while, we get one long shot to make the Super Bowl. Very rarely, if ever, do you get both the teams in the Super Bowl that are long shots. You're good with this stuff. Maybe you can think of an example, but both teams being a long shot.
Both, no.
Yeah. And both teams 0-1. Both teams lost week one and lost at home, and the Patriots lost to the Raiders in week one, which is just a reminder to say it every year that week one can often lead you astray if you're trying to make your base opinions off week one. That's just that's a dangerous way to go about it. What are your thoughts on Darnold MVP at plus money with the thinking that the narrative is going to be there, that as long as he plays decent, media seems to like him. He's bounced around, and I don't know whose team he's going to get beat up more Sunday on the telecast, on the broadcast. Your team or my team? The Jets for letting him go, they'll get dunked on, and the Vikings, I'm sure, will get brought up as well with his history. But do you think there's value in Darnold at plus money?
Well, the Jets will get banged on worse just because it's the Jets, but it's well deserved at this point. Again, my only MVP, but like I said, I have DeMarcus Lawrence at a giant number just in case this game devolves into a beatdown that is defense first for Seattle, or if it's just a grinder and both quarterbacks stink. The only concern I have with the Darnold thing is what happened with Stafford and Kupp a few years ago, where JSN just has if JSN has like an 8, 145 and 2 touchdown game,
you probably have to give it
that
to
might
him.
Be tough to overcome even for Darnold with the media narrative being in his favor. That's the only concern I would have. But yeah, I mean, look, Will, the plus money quarterback is always the way to go, right? Like, it's very hard for a non-quarterback to win the MVP unless if something extraordinary happens. So, yeah, I think if you like the Seahawks, you got to have Darnold plus money MVP in your pocket. And if you like New England, I think you have to have a Drake May MVP taken in your pocket. Because, Will, what's the path for New England winning the Super Bowl without May winning the MVP? I just don't see it. Like, unless if it's like a Darnold 4-pick game and Christian Gonzalez is, or Carlton Davis is multiple of them, which, I mean, maybe you throw a Carlton Davis bloated ticket in your pocket. But, like, I just don't see a path. Even if it's like a crappy 13-10 New England win, like, they'll give it to May unless if a defender has multiple picks or multiple sacks on a New England end, which, again, could happen. Could happen. That's my handicap on the DeMarcus Lawrence 125-1.
Yeah, I was thinking, because they don't give awards, unlike, I believe baseball does it, and yeah, baseball does it, and the NBA does it now with the conference finals gets MVP. I wonder who they would have given AFC title game MVP. Would you have given it to May just out of default because he had the runs?
I would have given it to Christian Gonzalez.
I don't think they would have, though. You think they would have?
I would have given it to Christian Gonzalez because of the pick at the end. And I mean, Denver did not. Granted, the weather. You could have given it to the snow. Can you give it to the snow?
I don't think you can.
Yeah, I mean, why not? Just dress him up in a Patriot jersey. Or it in a Patriot jersey, I should say. Nah, man, I think I would have given it to Gonzalez, but that would have been tough because of how awful that game was.
Yeah, they just don't usually give it to players on defense unless they score, but who knows. Final score for the game is what?
I am going in between my two scores, and I'm going 27-10 Seattle. I think this is a comfortable win for the Seahawks. And also, too, the other thing, the weird thing with Drake May's shoulder last week with the practicing, I know that the Patriots will deny, but, like, May has been significantly worse this postseason than he was at any point in the regular season, and I know that could also just be as simple as he's played three really good defenses, but it's a fourth one. I don't know. I just think Seattle's much better, Will. Like, did you see the graphic that was floating around last week? Forget of like the win, like who the Patriots beat, but like of who how many coaches even got retained of the people that the Patriots beat this year, Will?
Aaron Glenn is one of them. Aaron Glenn is going to be back.
Well, I mean, the retained coaches were Aaron Glenn, Zach Taylor, Dave Canales, and Todd Bowles, but in the regular season.
Yeah,
that's just insane. And I just mentioned, Canales is the only guy I think is good of those four. So, I don't know. I will tell you, I actually feel like I'm more equipped to go into next season bets than I am the Super Bowl. Because, New England's win total under feels like the best bet you possibly can make next year.
What do you think it'll be?
They're going to make it 11.5, and they're going to regress at least three games with a first-place schedule, you would think. And then Chicago, even though I love the Bears and I love Caleb and I love Ben Johnson, they're going to be in a regress team too. And then the Lions within that division are going to have a fourth-place schedule. So, I feel like I'm more equipped to go after season win totals for next year than I am in this game just because I don't love the betting angles in this Super Bowl.
Super Bowl menu, snacks, what do you got going on? Do you stay at home? Do you go somewhere?
I'm close to the game. We are to be determined at the moment, Will. We are to be determined. More likely than not, it will be a run to Costco on Saturday, and we will go with whatever looks good on the day before. That will likely be it.
What's in the mix? What are you thinking?
Look, the buffalo chicken dip and spinach dips always make an appearance. It depends if I'm willing to make the homemade cheese dip that is just simplistic and delicious. And is also basically a ball of grease when it comes out of the oven. So that's always a good thing to have. I don't know what a protein's going to be this year. Because when we were going, 2 weeks ago, I was like, you know what? We got a new grill. Maybe we're going to do ribs this year. But then it's like, you know what? That's labor and, I don't know. I don't want to do something I've never made before. So the protein will be the important thing. It's going to be a light year this year, man. It's just going to be us and three or four friends. It's going to be really a small group this year, Will. So we don't have to go overly aggressive on what we get. But it's going to buffalo chicken dip, spinach dip, maybe we'll homemade a salsa. Go get a pineapple and make some pineapple salsa, which will be fun. It's going to be light this year, man. It's going to be light. I wish I had a better answer for you.
College hoops Friday night. We get a good one. I feel like these teams played Super Bowl weekend the Friday night of the Super Bowl week last year. UConn and the Garden against St. John's. Great matchup, fun matchup. I believe the line is open now. UConn, it's basically a pick 'em game. UConn may be a touch of a favorite. Do you have any thought on this game?
You disagree with that line. UConn runs them. UConn runs them. No home court advantage for St. John's in that game, obviously. You know that better than I do, Will. We know how well that UConn fan base will make the short trip down to MSG. St. John's has not been good against good teams this year, Will. What would you even say? What is their best win at this point this year, Will? Like, is their best win Villanova? I don't even know what we would constitute their best win as, because all the good opportunities they had in non-con, they lose to Iowa State, they lose to Auburn, what was the other one? They lose to Kentucky by 12. Their best win's at Villanova, I would say. So even though it's a home game, I just think they're going to – I think St. John's are going to get run here. And Will, I think there's five teams we have to look at as legitimate tournament favorites that can win it all. The obvious ones at the top are Arizona and Michigan, who I think have separated themselves. But then UConn is in that mix. Isn't it kind of funny that Duke is somewhat got underrated at this point?
Yeah, Will? It is. It's a good point.
Like Duke has one loss. It's a neutral site loss to a high-end Texas Tech team where Duke led the game by double figures in the second half, and then Texas Tech just put the clamps on them. And Duke has, at worst, the third-best player in the country in Cameron Boozer. So, very odd what has happened with Duke. It's just because the ACC isn't good. But Duke is a legitimate title contender. And then my fifth one, the only non-one seed at the moment is Houston. I just think Kingston Fleming's is the best player that Samson has ever had in Houston. So he gives them an extra dimension they haven't had. Still have Tugler. They still have guys who are on that team that should have won the title a year ago. Houston's the fifth one. By the way, what the hell happened at Gonzaga on Wednesday night?
Oh, my goodness.
Like what?
Is that the biggest upset of the season? Was that a 23, 24
that was
point
not
spread?
The big, that was 18, I think.
Okay, maybe 24-1. Somebody tweeted that it was 24-1 on the money line, which seemed a bit high. I also saw 18-1.
I guess 24 was better. I'm sure there was something bigger in non-con, but I don't know. I'm not a big believer in Gonzaga anyway. I just don't think they're that good. And I also I was at that Michigan-Gonzaga destruction in Vegas. So, I still can't get that out of my head on both sides, but... I would be surprised if the champion does not come from that group of five I mentioned. The four projected one seeds right now, Duke, Michigan, Arizona, UConn, and then Houston. Kansas would be the other one that I would add in, Will. Just because if Darren Peterson is able to stay on the court, he is so special.
Oh my.
And it doesn't matter that Self has constructed a completely idiotic roster around him this year. And it actually played pretty well without Peterson this year. But I think Kansas is the – if you're going to pick a team from outside of that mix, you're looking at Kansas or Iowa State, and I just trust the team with the true superstar more. Like, the variance is higher, right? Well, the team with the true superstar could – Kansas could lose in the round of 32 pretty easily, but then they could win the title if Peterson has just an outlandish run, a Carmelo-like run 23 years later. So that's the team outside my top five that I could give a shot.
Have you ever seen a better freshman class than this one?
No. And it's just not the top three. It's down
it's so
the board,
deep.
Too.
Wagler and Illinois. I mean, there's a million of them. There's so many good ones.
Yeah, like Wagler and Flemings and Coa Pete at Arizona.
Caleb Wilson.
Caleb Wilson, the kid at Stanford who's averaging more than 20 a game. Corey, it's crazy. It's crazy how good this class is. Even though... Look, I'm a little bit worried about BYU at the moment, because even though the Bansta was awesome yesterday against Oklahoma State, they lose to a team they have no business losing to yesterday. The Bansta gets totally mossed by Kansas. They lose to Arizona. I'm a little bit worried about BYU.
His shots, he settles for shots. He settles for bad shots, fadeaways, and mid-range shots. His shot diet, he's incredibly talented, but his shot selection sometimes leaves a lot to be desired.
Yeah, look, I think for, winning a title this year, he's third of the big three. Because, again, it's sick to me that, it's not sick, but it's very bizarre to me that Duke, is being, kind of discounted of these elite teams. And Boozer's amazing. And he gives them a dimension that even, like, other than last year with Flag, like, they haven't had this dimension since Zion and RJ. Like, and I would argue for what college basketball is, like, Boozer's better than Flag was by the end of last year. And I know that may seem insane to people, but it's hard to take Cameron Boozer out of the game. You could take Flag out with physicality last year. I don't think you can do that with Boozer. So, yeah, insane freshman class, Will. Great year to be in the draft in the lottery, period, if you're in the NBA. And if you end up in the top three, I mean, you're getting three guys that most years would be number one without even an argument.
You're surprised or not surprised that the Giannis drama ends with a – boy, it gave people content, but – and again, we're recording this before the deadline, but all reports he is staying, which I started to think was probably the favorite, the more likely outcome. You think he gets traded in the summer, or you think maybe they get lucky in the lottery and it's possible they keep him?
I don't know what they're going to do at this point. I'm not surprised they didn't trade him because the offers aren't good enough. That, it's simple as that. The midseason offers just aren't going to be good enough, despite the fact that the Miami media has decided that it's the that the Bucks are keeping him to just sit him the rest of the year and then tank for the draft pick because they wanted to spite Miami. But again, if there's a media group that's more delusional than the Miami media, find it for me. But I'm not surprised at all. I said it on ESPN in Las Vegas last week when the rumors started, like, it doesn't make sense. The package isn't going to be good enough. I think he gets moved this offseason. Like, here's the problem, though. If you're Golden State, which makes the most sense of everywhere at this point to me, like, the Knick packages aren't good enough. If I'm Giannis, I don't want to go to Atlanta. I would prefer not to go from Milwaukee to Minneapolis, in all honesty. Like,
do the Lakers have enough? Do the Lakers want him, too? Because he's not a perfect fit with Luka. And I've mentioned this, too, which complicates things. He's 31. He can't shoot as great as he is. He's 31. He can't shoot. And he's hurt all the time. He misses playoff games all the time.
If I'm the Lakers, I got my superstar. I'm okay. I don't think it's worth – I think I have to really build this team around Luka and not have any controversy because that's part of the reason that I think the Lakers are as average as they are this year is because the LeBron and Luka just aren't coexisting properly.
They can't guard anyone, too. They just have no foot speed. Luka, LeBron, Reeves, and it's just not enough.
Look, if DeAndre Ayton is a key player, of course you're not going to be able to guard anyone. So, but, no, look, I would expect Giannis to get moved. I also wonder if I'm Milwaukee. It's like, you know what, at the end of the year, we can fire Doc after we miss the playoffs and be like, all right, Giannis, what is it? Who do we need to hire to keep you around and we won't fire him 31 games in like we did with Adrian Griffin? Because that's really the moment where everything went to crap here for Milwaukee, like, completely, was bringing, like, Doc Rivers is going to be our savior. Every person who's watched the NBA the last 20 years could have told you that wasn't going to work. So, I don't know. Also, I didn't understand the Bulls theme as well. Like, there was the Bulls theme in the, and then the Bulls who had just this completely bizarro trade deadline. So, I don't know, Will. It's a weird deadline for me. I haven't liked the single trade the entire time. Like, I think the Harden trade for Cleveland is completely idiotic. The only thing I can understand is they must think Darius Garland's feet are completely toast. Like, I think that's the only reason they make this trade, that they think that they can win a title more likely with Harden in the near future than Garland long term because Garland's feet are just so screwed up. But I don't know. And Harden, like, this is the fourth time Harden's done this. Like, asked out of a pretty darn good situation. So
seems like the 10th time.
Yeah, but, I mean, the Clippers have been really good the last 20 games. So, I don't know. Look, here's the problem with anything NBA handicapping at this point. It's all going to come down to, can the Nuggets or San Antonio beat Oklahoma City in a 7-game series? And to me, the answer to that is more likely no, even though San Antonio's had OKC's number in the regular season this year. Those games just are so much different in the playoffs. So that's really just kind of what it is when you have a dominant force in Oklahoma City. Despite the fact that there are some people out there who are like, yeah, they're really not that good. It's like, guys, I don't care that they're not going to break the wins record this year. They're still clearly the best team in the NBA. So we'll see. See how it all plays out. But again, Will, it's been a very now that Oklahoma City's like chased for 73, dissipated pretty quickly. Like, I don't really like this. Has been a very uninteresting NBA regular season for me, Will. Like, just can't get excited about anything.
It sure has. It's a major problem. That sport has a major. The playoffs are still really fun. That sport has a major regular season problem, though. There's just no juice. There's no stakes for it. And Ted Legler, when you have your NBA Finals analyst, your lead analyst, calling out the sport, and I don't know if you saw this clip, but I think he said it with Simmons maybe a week ago. Said, you know, the effort's just not there on a night-to-night basis. That is about as big of an indictment in your league as you could have.
Yeah. No, 100%. 100%. It just does not show well for your product if that's the case, Will.
All right, Jeff. Enjoy the game. We'll save the bay. We got enough time between now and baseball. We'll get to the baseball next time, I guess.
I will tell you, Will, this baseball regular season, talk about a league that does not have a regular season problem with their product right now, other than the fact that a lot of the league has no idea where they're going to have their games on TV this year at the moment. Despite the fact that there's a dominant force in baseball, this is shaping up to be a very intriguing regular season, because I'll just throw this out of there, and we can obviously talk about this when I see you next. The American League is insanely wide open going into the year, and the chase behind the Dodgers for the playoff spots is also really wide open. So this should really be an excellent regular season. And of course, baseball will screw it up by going into a lockout that will probably make a 2027 season that is 80 games at most.
All right, last one. We'll do baseball again soon, but have you made any baseball bets?
I have not, but I am going to be looking to fade the Phillies.
We'll end on that. Jeff, where can we find you?
ESPN Las Vegas. This week, I already had my shows earlier in the week. Saturday, noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific, ESPN Las Vegas. We'll be out at Treasure Island. So if you happen to be in Vegas, come on, say hello. 9 a.m. local time in Vegas on Saturday for Throw the Flag, the final one of the football season.
All right, that will do it. Thank you to Jeff Parles. We will be back on Monday. We will hop on right after the Super Bowl. I think Gil Alexander, his annual post-Super Bowl recap. We'll recap the game, and it's probably all we'll do. We'll react. Hopefully, we'll have a better game than last year to react to. But rate, review, subscribe. We'll be back on Monday. Enjoy the Super Bowl. Good luck with all of your bets. See you then.